Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, July 24th. As usual, we'll start with articles from the front page. Durfee comes down. We have a photograph of a level of the former Durfee school building falling to the ground as a water cannon sprays the site with mist for asbestos abatement during demolition in Decatur on Tuesday. And also a photo of Wade Grubb from Laborers Local 159 fixing a plastic lining to a hauling truck during the demolition of the former Durfee school building. Grubb said due to asbestos, the dump site wouldn't accept any rubble without the lining, and they will immediately get a bulldozer and bury it with dirt. Former Garfield School to become affordable senior apartments from Brendan Moore in Decatur. Building conversion to move forward. A former school building will be repurposed into affordable senior apartments instead of meeting the wrecking ball after receiving tax credits from the Illinois Housing Development Authority. Under the proposal, first introduced to the public in February 23, the building that formerly housed Garfield School and then Durfee Magnet School, 1077 West Grand Avenue, will be rehabilitated, expanded, and converted into 63 affordable apartments for people 55 and older who are living independently. The IHDA announced Tuesday that the Decatur project from St. Louis-based affordable housing developer Bywater Development was among those to receive federal low-income housing tax credits, LIHTC, a dollar-for-dollar program that, distributed through the states, incentivizes private sector involvement in affordable housing projects. The credits and other subsidies could equal more than $4.6 million. The City Council also voted in early 2023 to earmark another $675,000 in federal grant funds for the project. The tax credits were a necessary component to the $20.7 million project. Without them, city officials said it would not move forward, and the century-old school building would more than likely would be demolished. Deputy City Manager John Kinsa said the city was excited to see the project move ahead, calling it the most significant housing project in Decatur in more than a decade. "It's a big deal for the city," Kinsa said, "so we are excited about it." An official with Bywater declined comment, referring all inquiries to the city. The proposed senior housing development is the centerpiece of one of the Catalyst projects aimed at revitalizing the city's urban core neighborhoods. Earlier this year, the council okayed a redevelopment agreement with the Decatur Park District to pay for a portion of nearly $1.2 million upgrade to the adjacent Garfield Park that will include a new playground, basketball courts, trails, and various infrastructure upgrades. Future phases could also include 40 units of one-story affordable housing aimed at families, which would be located closer to Garfield Park, and eventually a new mixed-use development that would include additional apartments and retail would be located just south of the school, according to plans. But the first step is the senior housing complex. The project will include 5 studios, 46 one-bedroom, and 12 two-bedroom apartments. 18 of the units will be set aside for Decatur Housing Authority residents, with 14 units to feature rents at 30% of the area's median income, and 4 at 50% of the AMI. Another 7 units will feature rents at 50% of AMI, 21 at 60%, and 17 at 80%. The building is 100 years old and served as the longtime home of Garfield School. But the Garfield program moved out in 2000 to its present South Shores location when it completed its transition to a full Montessori school. Durfee Magnet School immediately moved in and occupied the building until the school closed in 2020. The building has sat vacant since. The bones of old school buildings figuratively and literally haunt the city, with several falling into such disrepair over the years and holding little value that the only option becomes demolition on city taxpayers' dime. Earlier this year, the council approved a $1.7 million contract for the demolition of the former Durfee School at Jasper Street and Grand Avenue and Centennial Koppenbarger School at 1500 East Condit Street. And last year, nearly $1 million was spent on the abatement and demolition of the former Woodrow Wilson Jr. High School building, 1140 West Sunset Avenue, with the city splitting the cost and eventually deeding the land to Decatur Public Schools. In March, the council and a school district signed off on a similar agreement stipulating that they would split demolition costs on Garfield if the state tax credits fell through. But it doesn't appear that will be necessary, as the city's application for tax credits for the project denied last year was approved on the second try. State Senate Senator Doris Turner, Democrat Springfield, said she was thrilled that the old school building would be transformed into something new instead of demolished. This will help bring community development, jobs, and housing options for Decatur close to many amenities. I applaud IHDA and everyone involved in making this development possible and can't wait to cut the ribbon when the construction is completed. It was not immediately clear when construction would begin. And again from Tony Reed in Decatur, politics. Macon County Party Chairman weigh in on Biden-Harris. Former California Attorney General Kamala Harris is the perfect Democratic presidential candidate to go up against Republican challenger Donald Trump, a former president who also happens to be a convicted felon. That's the considered opinion of Brian Smith, the chairman of the Macon County Democratic Central Committee. Smith's counterpart on the red side of the political equation, Macon County Republican Chairman Bruce Pillsbury, begs to differ, however. He says Harris is a political lightweight with a scant record of achievement and plenty of character flaws of her own for Trump to exploit. Both Smith and Pillsbury were asked to size up the shifted political landscape in the wake of the earthquake caused by President Biden's decision to quit the race for his second term. Vice President Harris has been seen to move swiftly to lock up the support of major Democratic Party figures and donors and looks on course to be her party's nominee for president. Taking a look at what's happening from the blue perspective first, Smith told the Herald and Review that Harris is capable of prosecuting the case with voters to deny Trump another shot at the Oval Office. Smith says Trump's track record and personal failings leave him vulnerable on many fronts, and Harris is ideally suited to exploit his weaknesses. It's a case of the prosecutor versus the felon, really, it is, he added, and I think with her experience as a prosecutor, she will be able to nail Trump on his record. Smith said switching the focus of the Democratic ticket to Harris is already acting like a shot of adrenaline for the party faithful. I've had calls from people who are excited now, he said. They want to get involved and they want to help, and I am thrilled about that. I think people were just kind of at a standstill after everything that had happened and transpired, but now people are excited. And the 59-year-old chairman also sees change at the top of the ticket, inspiring younger activists to get involved and help the party mount a strong campaign. I think Kamala Harris will reinvigorate the volunteer base in many ways, with younger people, women, minorities. I think she will reinvigorate everything, Smith said. As for President Joe Biden's decision to finally fade into the sunset of his long political life, Smith said he leaves on a high note. Obviously, he made a very difficult choice, but I applaud him for making that decision, the party chairman said. He's had a marvelous career, and there's nothing but high praise for everything he has done in his role as U.S. Senator, Vice President, and now President of the United States. Asked whether it would have been better if Biden had made the decision to drop out sooner, Smith said that is endlessly debatable. I think he had to weigh lots of different things, and he had to do it in his own time. I think he made a courageous decision and decided that was for the best, and I wish him well. And whatever the outcome of the 2024 presidential race, Smith said we are all living in momentous times that will grace the pages of future school and college textbooks. Oh, all this is groundbreaking, history-making, he added. Nothing like this has ever happened before. Pillsbury acknowledges that these are unprecedented times, and Biden's leaving the stage so late in the game is an extraordinary event. We wish him well in his retirement, and I don't think anyone wishes him ill, Pillsbury added. But I think his performance has been failing for some time, and not just this year. Anybody who has been paying attention could tell that, and even though his party has denied it, it's just become so obvious. I don't wish him anything but goodwill and good health, but I think his time has passed. That appears to leave the field clear for Trump versus Harris, and Pillsbury said the vice president is going to find herself under pressure to defend her record. He said her history in California as Attorney General doesn't appear to have produced much to brag about, and things only got worse with her track record in government. It appears her major assignment from President Biden was to be the border czar down on the southern border, and yet I don't know whether she has ever been down there, Pillsbury added. She was in charge of overseeing all that, and she has not done a very good job. He also noted Harris seems to have trouble taking life seriously as she makes a bid to be her country's president. She's always laughing. Everything seems so jocular to her, he noted. But when you are running for the most important position in the world, you have got to take things a little more seriously than she appears to be doing. Pillsbury does acknowledge that a change in the top of the ticket is likely to give the Democrats a boost, however temporary, after the gloom that settled in over Biden's fading fortunes. Yes, a definite boost in morale, whether it's Harris or anybody else that comes in after they were all feeling pretty negative about President Biden, he said. But Pillsbury sees no need for Trump to shift his angle of attack that much as the presidential contest moves forward. He said the illegal immigration crisis, persistent inflation, pocketbook issues, and crime worries affect everyone and give the Republicans much ammunition to use against their political opponents. It doesn't matter where you are on the economic level. We all see we are a lot worse off than we were 4 years ago, Pillsbury said. People are feeling this, and they know it. We'll continue with local and state news. From the Chicago Tribune, Olivia Olander, bill to protect domestic abuse victims from gun violence gets fresh look. Senate President Don Harmon on Thursday indicated lawmakers will take another look at stalled legislation that aims to protect victims of domestic abuse from gun violence in light of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to uphold a law prohibiting people under restraining orders from their partners from owning guns. Some lawmakers had been concerned that a ruling against such laws would have put the legislation known as Karina's Bill in jeopardy. Harmon acknowledged that he didn't expect a high court dominated by a conservative majority to issue the ruling it did. We were waiting on the Supreme Court's decision, and they surprised me in saying that we can, in fact, regulate that intersection of guns and domestic violence, Harmon said at a City Club of Chicago event Thursday afternoon. And we need to. The Network, an organization that advocates against domestic violence, said last month that the Supreme Court ruling had reinvigorated efforts to pass the bill. The Illinois legislation would require that law enforcement remove firearms from individuals who have orders of protection against them, clarifying when and how law enforcement can confiscate such weapons. As it stands now, firearms aren't always removed from people involved in those situations, even if the owner's firearm identification card is technically revoked. Many local police departments have filed opposition to the legislation. Balancing the needs of survivors and law enforcement is one of the challenges with the bill, Kathleen Sances, president and CEO of the gun violence prevention organization GPAC, said at Thursday's City's Club event. Illinois State Police Director Brendan Kelly, who was also at the event, said a key issue will be ensuring that law enforcement continues to have budget stability and resources to support them. The legislation is named after Karina Gonzalez, a Chicago resident whom prosecutors say was shot and killed by her husband last year. Her husband, Jose Alvarez, also killed his 15-year-old daughter, Daniela Alvarez, and wounded his 18-year-old son, prosecutors said at a hearing last year. Gonzalez had obtained an order of protection against her husband about 2 weeks before she was killed, and Alvarez's firearms owner identification card was revoked, according to prosecutors. But Alvarez never received the order of protection, and the Chicago Police Department said at the time its firearm investigation team had not received notification of the FOID card being revoked. Harmon did not specify a timeline for when the legislation could come before lawmakers. Advocates are eyeing the 2-week fall veto session in November, when the General Assembly will return to consider legislation for the first time since May. From Decatur, some are receiving new voter ID cards in Macon County in the mail. The new cards reflect a change in polling locations, Macon County Clerk Josh Tanner said. Voters are asked to carefully review their voter ID card prior to the election to verify their polling location, Tanner said. Residents with questions about polling places and other election information are encouraged to go to macon county.illinois.gov. Call the clerk's office at 217-424-1309 or email elections@macon.gov. Tiffany Hall hosting meet and greet bake sale fundraiser, Decatur. A meet and greet and a bake sale fundraiser will be held this weekend for Tiffany Hall, the Democratic candidate for Macon County Coroner. The event will be held from noon to 4 p.m. Saturday, July 27th, and Sunday, July 28th at the Macon County Democratic Headquarters, 152 South Church Street in Decatur. Light refreshments will be served. From Trenton, New Jersey, our National Digest. Source says Menendez plans to resign August 20th. U.S. Senator Bob Menendez will resign from office August 20th after his conviction for corrupt acts, including taking bribes and acting as an agent of the Egyptian government, a person familiar with the matter told the Associated Press on Tuesday. Menendez, 70, insisted after the July 16 verdict that he is innocent and promised to appeal. The Senate received a copy of Menendez's resignation letter, according to Senator Peter Welch of Vermont, who presided in the chamber Tuesday. The person who told the AP about Menendez's resignation did so on condition of anonymity because of New Jersey Democrats' decision hadn't been made public. The resignation will allow New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, a Democrat, to appoint someone to the Senate for the remainder of Menendez's term, which expires January 3rd. The seat is up for election November 5th. Democrats nominated U.S. Representative Andy Kim, who faces Republican Curtis Bashaw. From Des Moines, Iowa. Iowa abortion law will go in effect Monday. An Iowa judge ruled the state's strict abortion law will take effect Monday, preventing most abortions after about 6 weeks of pregnancy, before many women know they are pregnant. The law passed last year, but a judge blocked it from being enforced. The Iowa Supreme Court reiterated in June that there is no constitutional right to an abortion in the state and ordered the hold to be lifted. That translated into Monday's district court judge's decision, ordering the law to take effect next Monday. The order was a win for Iowa's Republican leaders after years of legislative and legal battles. 2 years after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, 14 states have near-total bans on abortion on all stages of pregnancy, and 3 states, Iowa will make 4, ban abortions after about 6 weeks of pregnancy. From Ethiopia, mudslides triggered by heavy rain in a remote part of Ethiopia killed at least 229 people, including many who tried to rescue survivors, authorities said Tuesday, in what the prime minister called a terrible loss. In Maine, shooting. 3 Army Reserve officers were disciplined for dereliction of duty after the October shooting in which a reservist killed 18 people in Maine, according to an Army report released Tuesday that cited communication failures and other shortcomings. From Yemen. The UN envoy for Yemen warned Tuesday that recent developments in the Red Sea, Israel, and inside the country show the real danger of a devastating region-wide escalation, but also said the country's warring parties agreed on a path to de-escalate some sectors. Croatia. A suspected gunman in a mass shooting at a nursing home in Croatia faces 11 criminal charges, including murder, after he was accused of killing 6 people, including his own mother, and wounding as many more, police said Tuesday. Kenya. Anti-government protesters in Kenya's capital clashed with an emerging pro-government group Tuesday. The military made a rare deployment as the protest focused on the country's main airport. Allies. Belarus's foreign minister arrived Tuesday in North Korea as experts predicted that he and North Korean officials would discuss forming a trilateral anti-Western front with Russia. In our food section today, we have recipes for treats without the heat. 3 dreamy no-bake desserts to try. No-bake strawberry margarita pie, No-bake lemon blueberry cheesecake bars, and peanut butter cup Rice Krispie treats. For the complete recipe, see the in-print edition. You also have savory recipes for grilled eggplant and tomato pasta, and teriyaki chicken tray bake. And now from our opinion page, different perspectives on what J.D. Vance brings to the vice president office. First from Jason Opel. Trump convert may blaze path for others. Just 2 days after surviving a bloody assassination attempt that claimed the life of one of his supporters, Donald Trump has chosen Ohio Senator J.D. Vance as his vice presidential running mate. That's a good move. Vance will help Trump, the former president and Republican presidential nominee, in two respects. One of these has to do with a crucial ideological shift in the American electorate, while the other relates to Trump's personality. Perhaps the most important ideological change over the past 20 years is the rejection of neoliberalism, the economic doctrine that champions free trade over government regulations or national borders. It originated from right-wing thinkers as a reaction to the New Deal coalition that was a major feature of American politics from the 1930s to the 1960s. But it became a bipartisan consensus in Washington after 1980, driving major policy changes that included the adoption of the North American Free Trade Agreement in 1993 and the bipartisan passage of welfare reform in 1996. Presidents from Ronald Reagan to Bill Clinton extolled the magic of the free market and the evils of protectionism. But neoliberalism produced winners and losers. Among the losers were many manufacturing regions in the U.S., which bled jobs for 50 years. Voters in the industrial and mining heartlands of Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and other manufacturing states never saw the promised rewards of free trade, and the whole idea rang hollow to an American political tradition that highly values manual work and production over commerce. My family, incidentally, hails from upstate New York, where factory closings have blighted households since the 1970s. The first political discussions I overheard concerned the betrayal of America's working people by parasitic free traders. The last unabashedly neoliberal American president was George W. Bush. The financial crash of 2008, a product in part of the hyper deregulation of financial markets, killed the idea among a healthy block of Americans. Ever since, both Republicans and Democrats have run against it in one way or another. Trump brought back tariffs. Biden prefers a combination of subsidies and targeted bans on Chinese competitors. A successful venture capitalist from Ohio who spent much of his childhood in the Appalachian regions of Kentucky, Vance rose to fame with his book Hillbilly Elegy, a moving look at what happens to hardworking people when they have no work to do. Vance discusses despair and drug addictions in the blighted region of Appalachia and recounts the choices in schools that enabled him to get out and calls for a kind of moral regeneration among people he obviously cares about. With Vance at his side, Trump will reinforce his anti-neoliberal bona fides and shore up his support in crucial states such as Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. The former president may also allay the biggest barrier to his reelection that he scares moderate voters. Why will Vance help in this regard? The Ohio senator was a vocal critic of Trump in 2016, even suggesting that Trump might become America's Hitler in a text to a former college roommate. But Trump did not attack Vance as he has many other opponents. Instead, Trump reached out to Vance and helped the younger man win his Senate seat during an open election in Ohio in 2022. By his own admission, Trump is not one to forgive and forget easily, yet his embrace of Vance suggests he can move on from disputes and criticism. And Vance, though new to politics, is a more conventional statesman than Trump in many ways. So Vance may help soften Trump's image somewhat, just enough, Republicans hope, to win over those who fear the former president's rhetoric and temperament. And Vance is only 39 years old, an heir apparent. Trump chose well. The Democrats have their work cut out for them as November presidential election approaches. Opel is a professor of history at McGill University in Montreal. He wrote this for The Conversation. And now from Patricia Lopez. He's MAGA, red meat, risking moderate votes. J.D. Vance once called Donald Trump America's Hitler, likening him to cultural heroin. Now the Ohio senator has been named the former president's running mate. It's a shrewd and calculated pick, a nod to Trump's base. More than any of the other contenders, Vance's selection shows that Trump wants to lock down the MAGA faithful and ensure they turn out, even if that means losing more moderate and independent voters. Vance's rhetoric is at times harsher and hotter than Trump's, and his positions more extreme. At 39, Vance is decades younger than the 78-year-old Trump, making the acid-tongued senator a young and vigorous inheritor of the MAGA movement, whenever that time should come. His selection also sends a clear message to the country that Trump is building a movement that will reshape the nation, not just for one term, but for the future. Vance has boundless ambition. Political experience? Not so much. He's a junior senator in his first elective office. He is opportunistic enough that should he win, Trump will need to watch his back for the next 4 years. Shortly after the assassination attempt on Trump's life, Vance was the only VP candidate on the former president's shortlist to rush to the harshest conclusion possible, accusing President Joe Biden's campaign of rhetoric that he claimed led directly to President Trump's attempted assassination. Not a shred of evidence supports that claim, and the shooter identified by authorities was a 20-year-old registered Republican. Vance first gained notoriety with the 2016 publication of his memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, which traced his Appalachian roots and the country's growing class divide. It was, in short, all about the forgotten men and women Trump references when politically necessary. But Vance saw Trump differently back then. A self-described never-Trumper, Vance turned his scorching rhetoric on Trump, calling him noxious and reprehensible. He gained further acclaim and a berth as a political commentator for his extreme views on the newly elected president. That all stopped around 2018 with one of the most abrupt and unlikely conversions in recent political memory. Soon, Vance had joined the MAGA chorus, transforming from attack dog to Trump acolyte. The reason soon became clear. Vance needed Trump's endorsement to run for U.S. Senate badly. Trump, who sees ritual humiliation as a rite of passage to his circle, put Vance to the test. At a 22 rally, Trump taunted the young upstart. J.D. is kissing my A. He wants my support so bad, Trump said. Vance got in the endorsement. Trump got the satisfaction of making Vance eat his words. A new relationship was born. Vance has remained a devoted ally ever since. Like Trump, he is a pro-Israel and anti-Ukraine. He has embraced Trump's protectionist position on tariffs. On cultural issues, Vance has indicated his willingness to consider a federal 15-week abortion ban. But ever conscious of Trump's shifting positions on the issue, he has downplayed it. Well aware of how abortion rights have played to Democrats' advantage, Trump has sought to distance himself from promises of federal action and insisted on stripping the promise of a federal ban out of the party's platform, a bedrock position for decades. Vance has shown he is nothing if not flexible, and he doubtless will remain closely attuned to Trump's shifting whims as he searches for what's politically expedient. His appeal to MAGA loyalists is evident. Shortly after word of his selection was announced via Trump's Truth Social, Kevin Roberts of the Heritage Foundation, authors of the Project 2025 Blueprint for a second term Trump term, was delighted. "We were really rooting for him," Roberts said. "We couldn't be happier." Lopez is a Bloomberg columnist and former editorial board member, senior political editor, and reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned. The four-day forecast, a high of 85 today and a stray evening thunderstorm, a low of 66 tonight. Thursday, high of 83 and low of 59, mostly sunny and pleasant. Friday, sunny and nice, high of 85, low of 61. Saturday, it's going to be windy, 86 and a low of 65. Please stay tuned for part two of the Decatur Herald and Review.